Well, welcome back to Knights and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. So Dave Scatina on the board. He's reeling from too much basketball. I think so am I. S&P futures up 450. NASDAQ futures up 96. So we'll see what happens this week. We had a down week last week. So, like I said, we will see. The everybody, if anybody's got a bracket that still looks good, good luck with that. I'm going to say that, what, the Warren Buffett's group, everybody's already out, right? Aren't they, David?
Yeah, that's what I heard. I'm not sure, though. I'd imagine.
Yeah, Frank, how are you?
Good.
And
we will see. We're still in the range. It's amazing how it bumps off the top. Are we back down to 37.75 again?
Yep. Well, we're on the June futures, correct? We can put the March futures in the history category, correct?
Yep, bada bing.
Yep, that's, it's just whatever.
Put the old cork in the bottle for March.
That's right.
As Art Roberts used to say.
Yeah. No, just so you know, as the co-hosts of Stocks and Jacks, I strive for the same thing of, what's his name, Porter Moser? Is that the Loyola coach?
Yeah, Porter Moser.
We're looking for people with character, not a bunch of characters. Just saying.
Wow, he's doing a better job than you.
that is the truth. Hey, do you believe, I'm stunned, but not by the basketball so much, the evenness of some of these teams. What do you think is causing that? I mean, it's not like the teams that are upsetting the other guys. It's not like they're 20 for 20 from the 3-point line and don't belong on the floor with them. I mean, they look even. I mean, they're with them the whole way. I mean, Loyola pretty much beat up an Illinois from start to finish. It wasn't like, you know, they lucked out. You would never have guessed by watching the game who was the big favorite.
Well, Loyola's point guard was on the same team with Illinois' point guard. They know these teams. Plus, I think a lot of it's the pandemic schedule. You just played a certain schedule and you didn't play outside of a certain style. So we really don't know how good these teams are either.
That's true. They didn't break anybody out of it. I mean, Illinois looked like they had never seen a high post center before. They had no idea how to deal with it. It was like, you know, we're talking about showing my age. It looked like Tom Bowlinkle winging the ball. Remember, he used to come in, remember? No matter what, there'd at least be one play when he first came in the game to Matty Gukas behind everybody else where he'd have run contested layup and everybody wondered, how the hell did he do that? They must have done that 10 times yesterday with Loyola.
Well, this guy has great hands and he's immovable. That's really good foot movement, crop leg.
That is the truth. I mean, when you talk about basketball, everybody always thinks, you know, your ability to jump out of the gym, which would be very nice, especially for a guy like me who couldn't jump. But it's court awareness, it's hands, and it's vision. You know, it's a lot of what you're, I mean, that's what Larry Bird and those guys, once they get their hands on the ball, nobody else got it. Adrian Dantley is the same way. I mean, those guys, that's why they're in the Hall of Fame, right?
Right. And I think Krautleg probably had, what, 4 steals?
Yeah. And didn't get in foul trouble. Well, that guy in Illinois, he's a man mountain. I mean, he's a man among men at center. He'd bang up on that guy. The guy doesn't even move. I mean,
like, well, either does Krautleg.
Yeah, well, he's not as big as the other dude. The other guy's, you know, he's serious. But then they don't get him the ball all the time either, which is they double and tripled him and dared the other guys to. But, you know, did you watch, I don't know how many games you watched, but the end of the game, the one I was absolutely stunned was it Abilene Christian? They actually called a foul, like 1 second left, and the guy plunked the 2 free throws and won. Right, that was Abilene Christian, right, David?
Yeah, I think that was. Tom.
But then what was the other one? You said was it Texas Tech where the guy goes in and I'm surprised they did foul him so bad. I'm surprised his shorts were still on. They didn't call that one. The guy ended up like in the first row. They didn't call that one at the end of the game. But these
I gave up on Oral Roberts, Florida. I said Florida has it and left.
You can't.
Else.
Yeah, you can't tell me that the big gap there is every Christian school is winning, except for the Christian schools like Notre Dame that didn't make it to the tournament. You know, just saying.
There's a certain segment of this country that says Catholic is not Christian.
Well, there's a huge.
I've heard it my whole life.
Well, there's a huge section that says that Jesuit is not Christian.
Not the section I grew up in.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? I remember some story, the for those of you who don't know, this hospital is supposed to be closing and blah, blah, blah. Is the Sisters of Mercy, you know, started Mercy, right? It's like the oldest hospital in the city. And I don't know. I think they can't stand the Jesuits. I mean, there's a huge, whatever. You don't want to piss these nuns off. Did you read?
My whole life, I've had uncles and cousins in the Jesuits.
Wow. That explains a lot.
Yeah. Actually. I'm a Christian, I guess.
Or something. Did you? They had Sister Jean, so they go to the lady on the floor, who's actually a very good reporter. Don't know why she needs the 12-inch extenders. Of course, I'm sitting there with ordering one of her friends, and they go, God, look at the extenders. I said, how do you guys even know? Catch a towel, for God's sake. They don't even match. I'm like, whatever. I mean, there's so many things I must go right through in life and don't even notice. It's pretty scary.
Because it doesn't matter.
I guess. Matters to them. I mean, I never notice if anybody's got a toupe on, unless they're on TV and it looks like really bad. Dr. J would notice a toupe in a second. Of course, he's follically challenged, but still. Look at that guy's rug. It looks like a roadkill. Okay. I'm oblivious to all this stuff. So they read, they're going to read Sister Jean's pregame prayer. Did you see that part? Where she starts talking about, these guys hit 50% from, shoot 50% and 30% behind the line, but if we play good defense. So the lady goes, that's not a prayer, it's a scouting report, for God's sake. Which, it sounded like, I think Sister Jean's into the game a little bit, more so than she is to the prayer. But,
she's into the prayer. She always prays that no one on either team gets hurt.
Well, that is the Catholic mantra. You're supposed to do that. We'll all come out of this in one piece.
Hey, come on. I swam for Notre Dame. I was on a team. We traveled with the chaplain, had mass every day, and ended every practice with a prayer. Our Lady of Victory, pray for us.
So what do they pray for? Nobody drowned?
You sound like Gene Paskett. Get out of here. Swimmers don't get hurt.
Well, they do get hurt, I think, but...
How many times did I rotate my shoulder under pressure? Millions.
Yeah, but you didn't get hurt from a contact injury unless somebody left their lane.
Oh, no, you can swim into a wall, trust me. I've seen that happen many times.
Oh, I can...
I've seen people knocked out.
Really? What happens there? Guys just...
You miss time a stroke, you don't see. We swam without goggles back in my day. So you're looking through a squint.
Oh.
Backstroke, you only have the flags up during a meet.
So I would say that wouldn't bother me at all. The speed I swim, I get banged right in the water. I wouldn't even notice it. Just saying.
You remember your swimming test?
Yes. David, get a load of this. First day, they had a guy who was a big, huge, fat guy who was seriously gay. He ran the Rackney, right? Fat Eddie was his name.
No, he ran. Fat Eddie ran the towel room.
The towel room. Well, yeah, he didn't run the whole building. And it was his best day because everybody had to take their swimming test. There was no girls there, right? So you didn't when you went swimming, you just jumped. There was no bathing suit involved, right? So
not on the swimming test.
Well, there wasn't most of the rest of the time either.
Oh no, I didn't feel like that there and swam. We had swimsuits all the time.
Well, the lifeguards, maybe. You guys were...
No. The people wore suits there.
All right. I was only in there.
How much time did you spend at the pool?
Like twice. I swam test like
one. Yards.
So anyway,
you probably cried when you jumped in.
No. I passed my swim test. So what did you have to do? You had to swim across. You had to tread water for like 3 minutes or something. What else do you have to do?
I have no idea. It was like, you know, walking across a room for me.
So, Dave, if you didn't pass, you couldn't pass the swim test, you had to take swimming in gym. And if you passed, then you could go take any other stuff. So it was kind of, but the fact that you had like a couple hundred guys naked running around fed, he was in hog heaven. Pardon the pun. But he was quite the character.
He was. He died young.
Oh, yeah. He was real heavy before people were heavy, you know, which is, at least now I don't think it's as bad because you have stuff you can take, but then back in those days.
The next day was the 20-minute run.
No, we didn't do that.
And I did 200 yards. I wasn't going to run. I was going to hurt myself if I ran for 20 minutes.
Actually, you know what? I think they made everybody run a quarter mile or something.
That's different than 20 minutes. It depends.
It would take me 20 minutes.
I went to the South Dining Hall and got a chocolate malt and walked back.
Oh, God. All right, Frank, what's going on? Mark, I was thinking, I sent you some stuff last night. I'm trying to piece together. What I'm trying to do here is, if anybody could possibly string together what my theme is here over the last few weeks. I'm trying to put together some of these numbers that people don't necessarily want you to. I don't know if they don't want you to have them. I can't figure out whether the hole we have in reporting here, which I consider to be a hole anyway, in the terms of the numbers, you never get the added up story, you never get the full story, and we have listeners that send me stuff from overseas. It seems like it's much better written. It's the numbers add up. You don't have to get out your calculator and check them. But here, I'm just stunned with the amount of money that's flying around. Are they just landing stuff at places? And believe it or not, it ties in, David, what we were talking about on Friday. The people who are running the show now, and I don't think it's Joe Biden, the people who are running the show, when the Republicans were in, I didn't like most of those guys, but at least I knew who the hell they were. This group, I don't know if this money is staying in this country, if it's going out of the country, what it's doing.
You didn't know them either, Tom.
I had a pretty good idea.
Under the previous administration.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about
Mnuchin?
No, I'm not talking about Trump. I'm talking about going back to the Bushy years. At least you knew who was behind it. All you do is take a picture. What's the name of that group in you have the big party once a year out in the sequoias, and everybody wears
dresses, women, and then the sequoias.
No,
that's what they do. They do dresses, women, for the big dinner.
Oh, that I didn't know.
Know the enemy.
The only pictures I saw was one great picture one year. There's Reagan, Nixon, Bush, and about five other guys. You know, Rummy and Schultz all sitting there. I must have all gone out and bought flannel shirts that day or something. They're all sitting there in their flannel shirts. They look so uncomfortable in those things, and not in their suit. They're all sitting there at this big log cabin out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, at least you knew who the people were. You know, Schultz and the Cabots and the Lodges and those guys. And what was the saying? The Cabots only talk to the Lodges, and the Lodges only talk to God or something. But at least the only thing I can say about those guys. Is I really didn't. I'd rather give money to them than some multinational that's not even here.
They are not multinational. Come on,
they've got
money.
I'm saying at least I had a feeling who they were. I don't know who the current people are. So when this money flies out there, I mean, to a certain extent, it's like the pensioners in Illinois. If somebody has five pensions coming his way, and some people do, or three or four, two is very common. I really don't want them living in Florida, right? I mean, at least if it's going to be our money going to somebody who probably doesn't deserve it, I'd rather them be in a state, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's not happening. And if you're going to give money to a company, you know, billions of dollars, I'd rather the company be here, wouldn't you? And none of these drug companies are here, are they?
Not really.
No. Anyway, so I'm trying to piece together where the money's going. Now, Illinois, I have not read it. Well, it's got to be somewhere. Have you read it, how much money Illinois is getting in this deal? All I heard about was the San Francisco thing, because everybody was on Pelosi right away. San Francisco's entire debt got wiped out or something by money coming out of the deal. There was $650 million in debt, and that's how much they got or something. Or billion. It couldn't have been billions. $650 million. And anyway, but I was going through this thing. The state's losing the most people. Did you read some of the story of these cities in Illinois? That Cairo's down to like 2,000 people or something?
It's been that way. It's a wonderful town, Cairo. Rather than integrate their swimming pool, they filled it with concrete.
They also seem to have lost their...
Among
their,
other things.
Yeah, they seem to have lost their last grocery store. I mean, there's like 2,000 people left or something.
Welcome to the Great Plains.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that St. Louis is... Is down to what? A quarter million? It's got to be more than that.
South Bend went in my lifetime from 145,000 down to 90.
Well, that's not good.
They're all in the county. The SMSA didn't, or CMSA, whichever, didn't lose people. You know, your standard metropolitan area.
Well, it hangs in there as long as people have a place to work. And I'm not so sure that... Anyway, what I'm saying is a lot of things are happening here that, taken together, are not good. I mean, there's always going to be people wanting to leave some town and head to another town, but these towns in Illinois, the Decaturs, the Danvilles, I mean, they're just dropping by, you know, percents a year.
Well, Decatur lost out to Daniels Midland.
Yep. They moved to Chicago,
it's
right?
It's the Bohemian Club, by the way. And they meet at Bohemian Grove.
Okay, where is that? They were not going to let us in there.
It's a San Francisco club, but the Grove is Monterio, California.
Wherever that is.
Massive year-round security, but yes, they do dress as women.
Why would they do that?
I don't know. I guess the same reason they have massive security.
We did that one night, by the way. We were out... A whole bunch of us were out skiing in Steamboat, and they had one of those places where you could walk in and all dress up on different stuff. The first one, we were cowboys, and then I think it was our buddy Mike Coyle said, "Hey, why don't we dress up as women?" I was like, well, we ended up doing it. It was interesting. But you didn't have to. You didn't exactly have to dress up. They had stuff you just put on top of the rest of your clothes. It wasn't like you had to go in the back room and put on nylons or something. Just saying. Anyway...
just listening.
Yeah, just there was the picture was kind of funny. Of course, the girls look good. the girls look fine. The guys didn't look so good. Market
work. That's why you should never have pictures. That's the biggest downfall in American society in certain areas, is the fact that there's always 20 cameras within 20 feet of you.
Well, you know, just real quick here before we talk about the market. The market's not doing very much. Last week, a couple of people we know, shall we say, had somewhat of a falling out. So one of the guys calls me to broker the peace, Frank. I don't know why, you know, I get in the middle of this stuff. And he says, well, you know, it's like we run the trading floor. You call somebody a name, and 5 minutes later, you're out having a beer with the guy. And I said, on the trading floor, we never put it in an email. If you call somebody a name, you don't put it in an email. What's the matter with you? I said to the guy. He goes, well, yeah, I guess I should have done that. Yeah. Just saying.
I mean, I'll need the update on that. But,
yeah.
Well, no, there's people I hated from the first moment I met them on the trading floor.
Oh, there's a few. Yeah.
I had somebody once tell me that you were going to rape my sons and kill my wife.
That's a little harsh.
No, it was.
Was this guy some kind of dweeb, or was he capable?
No, he was a 5'4" dweeb with 6-inch lifts.
God,
you know the type.
Yeah. There's a few of those. The equities had more weirdos, I think, than the index, because the index just there wasn't much time for that.
No. Trading floors attracted people, equities and the index. There were more people there, so it wasn't as readily apparent.
Well, what did you...
That fit with eight people, yeah. You knew.
Yeah, but, you know, they're sort of the same. I mean, you've worked in factories. I mean, at Pullman, I didn't know. I'm sure there were... Whenever you got 1,000 people in one room, you get characters.
Hey, I worked at a trailer factory fabricating steel from the coils, down to making the outriggers for the frames, and we had three different motorcycle gangs there.
Yeah, well, you know what they...
The cops came once and arrested two guys for crucifying some guy into a tree and burning him. That's who I had dinner with every night at 11 or lunch.
And, I hope you kept your political opinions to yourself. Just saying.
Okay, I just kept to myself. I had a name. I had in every factory I ever worked in. College boy.
Yes. So, David, you know what they say about working steel? It never changes. You slit it, you bend it, you punch it. Which is true.
That is true.
The all right, Frank, we're up 775 today, and we're up 100 in the NASDAQ. We've got the bonds. Let me see where the bonds are. I can just tell by looking at the TNX. We've got the TNX is unchanged this morning. So, what do you make of First of all, people's ability to even know what the hell's going on with inflation, since most people have never heard of it before or never actually been involved in it. What do you think?
We have a 200-point trading range that we're bouncing around, like 37.50 to 39.50, 37.75 to 39.75. I mean, the resistance is astounding. It gets near there, and then you're down 100 points.
Yep.
You know, in a matter of days. Yep. And at 39.80, yeah, I think we're, or 37.80, I think we're going up. At 39.70, I'm thinking we're probably going down, but it's hard to bet against the upside.
Well, right now we're at 39.07, kind of like right in the middle.
Yeah.
What do you make
what are we going to do?
What do you make of
the... I have no idea. You know what it depends on? Is if this variant if a variant comes out that hits people that have had their two shots.
I don't think that's going to happen, but I'm hoping I'm right.
Well, you never said that when you were trading and had it work out well.
No, that is the truth. Well,
you know what I mean.
I got some sort of chilling article from one of our listeners regarding the dangers of giving out vaccines in the middle of when people are still getting the thing, in a sense of what it could do to actually cause the variants. And I'm reading this thing going, I didn't really need to read this, but anyway, it has to do with there's risks in giving out. And the article is really all over the fact that they never just let young people just get it. They said because there was virtually no danger of young people dying. They never should have closed the schools. And by the way, the one way you kill a virus is to get it into people and people's body kill it.
Now, who teaches the kids? The kids don't die, but the teachers die. And there's plenty of examples of that.
You can find an example with this particular disease. Any story you want, you can find an example of it.
Well, my favorite one is, I'm not getting the shot. I know somebody that died 4 hours after they had the shot. I know somebody that died 4 hours after having a Coke. Don't drink Coke. How do I with statistics?
But you can't deny that we've never seen a vaccine. I happen to believe that because of the makeup of this and the way they've done it, I happen to believe it's safe. But I also know that nothing's been rushed to market this fast with people giving the same people that will tell you that if somebody had it before and has the antibodies, you can't trust that guy, but don't worry, this vaccine makes everything perfect. I don't trust him at all, because the studies I've read from England are that people who have had the antibodies and get the vaccine are bouncing along with the exact same timeline of when it's still good. The whole idea, giving somebody the vaccine, is to make them like the person who already had it. And yet, you'll not get any one of these people to ever admit that, Frank. That's absolutely true. I mean, of all the things I've said about this disease, what they're trying to do is give somebody who hasn't had it the same antibodies as somebody who did.
I have read in peer-reviewed literature that the vaccine covers a wider range than the individual variant you may have.
They hope it does.
Well, a lot of this is hope anyway. Vaccines always have been. Hey, do you want to have somebody rub cowpox on your arm? That was hope.
I'm going to say that I had somebody do that probably 7 times. That's how many vaccinations I got, because I never got the scar. So every new doctor would tell my mother it must not have taken. I had another vaccination. That's what that was, cowpox, right?
Right.
Well, I had all kinds of that stuff.
Well, yeah, I was, as a kid, there's no pictures of me, you know, up to about age 3 or 4 at the beach or playing outside in the summer. And it was all because of polio.
David, can you picture Frank as a child without shuddering?
I'm not going there.
What's a kid on TV with a little bow tie?
Oh, I wasn't that kid.
No, but you were a little bit of it, a little bit. You didn't have the bow tie, and you were more athletic. Just saying.
Right, that's why I watched right. Another game, I guess.
All right, Frank, I said 150 by Memorial Day. and 175 by Labor Day. We already blew through to 175. Now we're back to 167. How fast are we going to go on this, or are we going to stop here? And these interest rates.
I have no, interest rates, I think they're being artificially held down. I think 175 again for sure, maybe 200.
Do you think it's time to trade some of these commodities, or we're too late? Like a lot of my clients are asking, and I had to tell some dudes on Friday that this is what, actually at PTI, we can trade commodities for you. I have a Series 3 and everything, but a lot of the places where I do business with, they're strictly money managers, investment advisor group. And I said, no, you can't. And there's all these people wanting you to make the decision of how much they want to put in Bitcoin versus the regular stocks. And I'm going, I think Bitcoin's worth nothing. You're asking the wrong guy. It's not my decision to make. That's yours. It's like asking me, should you put money into stocks or should you buy a six flat? So we decide how much you want to put in.
You have people that want to buy wheat and know nothing about Australian wheat market.
I would
the
much
Australian
rather
wheat board or Brazilian soybeans.
Those things. I was I had a client who had what's the number five oil? Not bilge oil. What do they call it? Bunker oil that you can't use on ships anymore. You're not supposed to use it on ships, but some places, some third world countries, of course, are buying this stuff. And this guy wanted me to get him a future on bunker oil, right? So I dig into oil futures. You know how many oil futures there are in the world? There's like 50 of them. Of different grades of oil that are trading on the Rotterdam Exchange or something. You have to really know your stuff to trade like oil futures. I mean, because the different grades and the different futures all over the world. I bet if you really knew what you were doing, you could make some money. There can't be 100 people that know that whole thing.
That was supposed to be Enron's game.
Well, then they decided it was easier to take California power, bring it over the border, and bring it back at twice the price, and have it three times the price, and have the idiots from California not catch you, which they didn't.
No, of course. So it was a scam. But how many spot oil prices?
I don't think it was a scam.
How do they correlate? I mean, it's insane.
Oh, yeah.
I know a guy that trades coffee I had a student that traded coffee in Europe for the largest coffee company in Germany. And when he'd talk about the weather in different parts of the world, it was just amazing.
Oh, yeah. It's like, we're going to let you go, but it's like Kung Fu. My brother traded corn options, but every different commodity is like, what they tell Kung Fu, every style is a lifetime of learning. So it's like that. Maybe you can't just take a guy out of the corn pit that knows all different about the different places and weather and throw him in the wheat pit. He's like a man on a, you know, on dry land, or a fish on dry land, right? They're all
right.
So different.
And I never thought those pits were the most honest anyway.
We should have a conversation about that one day, because some of them weren't. Anyway, SP Futures up. Talk to you later in a week, Frank. SP Futures up 9, NASDAQ Futures up 110. Be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Dave Scatina on the board. I'm sitting here reading about the episode with the Turkish lira last night, and it's one of the reasons why there's some instability around the world here this morning. The guy has fired his third central bank chief in 2 years, which sounds like Chicago sports. But anyway, we'll read more about that when we're done with our traffic, weather, sports. We've got the S&P futures are up 950. The NASDAQ futures are up 110. Dow is down 8. In the Dow individual stocks, I got Goldman Sachs down 3. That's probably most of it because it's kind of a quiet morning. In Europe, we got the DAX up 35.2%. FTSE up 8.1%. CAC around down 13.2%. Over in Asia, Nikkei is down 617. That's 2%. Evidently people think that some people in Japan are linked in with this Turkish lira. I don't know what the connection there would be, but that's what people are attributing the Nikkei drop this morning to. Shanghai is up 38. That's 1.1%. Hang Seng down 105.4%. So very odd combo over there. The way of review, Dow Jones on Friday was down 234.7%. S&P was down 2 only. NASDAQ was up 99. So we've been very mixed here as well. This morning, bonds are down 6 basis points to 167. The Bund down minus 3.1. Japan is down pretty heavy this morning, as they do it. I guess the Turkish lira would not have made that connection. Japan is up positive 0.07, which is lower than it has been. Oil up a penny, 61.43. Brent down 11 cents, 64.42. Natural gas down 3 cents, 2.50. RBOB at 193. Down from about 204 last week. So we've got gold down $4 to 1736. Silver down 54 cents. It's 2% to 2577. And I'm long silver everywhere. I'm not so sure that's good. A copper up a penny, 412. We got crypto last but not least up 235, 57,812. David, we have for us traffic weather in about 100 games.
Right. Good morning. It's 637 in Chicago. Traffic this morning, building normally. We have our road construction on the Kennedy and the Eisenhower as usual. There also is slow traffic on the Stevenson at the exit ramp onto the Ryan Expressway. There is a road closure at Wolf Road South between Milwaukee Avenue and Manchester Drive. Weather today in Chicago right now, it's 48 and fair. We're going to have a decent day, 60-40, mostly cloudy this afternoon. Phoenix listeners, it's 57 and partly cloudy. It's going to be a high of 75 and sunny today. Start out with the NBA. The Bulls beat the Pistons 100-86, and the Suns topped the Lakers 111-94. NCAA Tournament Bracket Buster Weekend. Loyola beats number one seed Illinois 71-58. We have four double-digit seeds that will advance to the Sweet 16. Number 11, Syracuse. Number 15, Oral Roberts. Number 12, Oregon State. And number 11, UCLA plays number 14, Abilene Christian. Big Ten is now has three teams left out of nine, and three of them will play today, so we'll see what happens with them. In spring baseball, the Sox beat Sox tie the Diamondbacks 4-4, and the Cubs beat the Reds 11-6. Back to you, Chief.
Your friend, John, how are you?
Todd, I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing all right. I was just wondering how we could become a huge sports analyst if we look like this Paige Spiranak. This is a spectacular story. This lady who was a golfer, and now so she sends out this incredible picture with the headline, "Is everybody else's bracket a dumpster fire too?" Now, everybody's bracket is a dumpster fire, but we don't look like that. Just saying. I mean, we would never send our picture out with something moaning about our bracket, I don't think, would we? Just saying.
Or having dumpster in the same sentence.
What the hell is going on over in Turkey, Jan?
I don't know. I just, you know, first heard about this, you know, this morning after I got up, so I'm kind of, I was going to ask you what to make of it. I thought you're my expert at these things.
Well, listen, we got to talk about the Canadian National buying the Kansas City Southern. What, and then there were five, David? Railroads?
Right.
I mean, if this is an easy one. You know, we would never want this, but put my butt in the Oval Office, and I see that, and I go, pick up the antitrust group, and I say, just say no. Canadian National has bought the Wisconsin Central, right, in the last few years, and they bought the IC, and now they're buying the Kansas City Southern. So that's like the entire central part of the country. So you have the Burlington Northern, Santa Fe goes east and west, and you've got the Union Pacific, Southern Pacific going east and west. So there's only two railroads going there, and you got the Norfolk and Southern going east, and you've got the Chessie system going east, and then the whole central of the country then is owned by the Canadian National. Is that really what we want?
I see big problems. I don't think you have to be too imaginative to see that there's problems with something like that.
But the weird part is Kansas City Southern has made money. They make money all the time. So it's not like we're brokering something between a place that's falling apart. They're actually very successful. So is Wisconsin Central. I see not so much. But I mean, what do we need? What do we need this for? We absolutely do not. I don't
think. You would think it's a matter of just basic national policy. You don't want this, even with an ally or a friendly neighbor involved in the picture. It's not good.
Well, the thing is 23% over were closed on Friday, allegedly. I didn't check that out, but I'll take their word for it. And it's like $25 billion, which compared to the companies we've been talking about, you know, the cloud companies that are worth God knows how many hundred billion, and they've never made a dime yet. I'm going to say that at $25 billion, you couldn't begin to replace what the Kansas City Southern owns for. It would be $1 trillion. I mean, how much?
Oh,
could you,
absolutely.
I mean, what could you pass? I'm not talking about rolling stock. I'm talking about the right of ways, the property, the track. I mean,
everything. The trackage, the equipment, the signaling, all this stuff.
I can't even begin to think what that would be cost to replace. We still don't value, and especially if we're going to enter a serious inflation period, which I think these guys are not going to be happy until they are in. Don't feel chilled on this, because I'm reading, this is chilling to me, this Turkey, and this article is written by a lady named Natasha Turak. What was Natasha's last name in Racking Bullwinkle? Was it Fine or
Fatal? Natasha Fatal.
Fatal, that's right. Anyway, but this lady writes a nice article here on. Anyway, the guy's name who got bounced is Nasi Agbal. I'll get that right. He was sacked by this Erdogan guy. Is this Erdogan about? Is he becoming one of the more evil people around or not?
He's pretty shady.
Yeah. The guy has been. He had served less than 5 months at the head of Turkey's central bank. Now, mind you, the vast majority of economists right now agree with what the Fed is doing and say inflation is not a problem. During that time, this guy, he raised the country's main interest rate by roughly 450 basis points to 19%, something that the vast majority of economists believe was necessary to tame Turkey's high inflation and bring stability to lira. So the same, and God, I hope we don't get there, the same buffoons that will tell you that this is the greatest policy we're doing right now since sliced bread, or same guys will be cheering somebody going to like 15% to tame inflation if they keep at it, in my opinion. Turkey's lira fell dramatically on Monday morning after President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, there's a name, Recep Tayyip, what are two Y's together pronounce this? I have no idea. Jen, you're a linguist. What are two Y's together? What is that? Hey, how do you pronounce it? Beats you. You're an English professor, for God's sake.
It's pronounced Erdogan, isn't it?
The name. I'm talking about the guy's middle name. How do you pronounce Tayyip?
I won't even commit.
Sorry? I'm going to say Tayyip. Because that's a... Anyway, he fired the country's central bank chief, the third to be fired in 2 years, sending shockwaves to the investor community. He sounds like a coach of the Bears, the third to be fired in 2 years. The currency plunged more than 16% in early morning Asian trading, according to analysts, hitting 8.4 against the dollar compared to a close of 7.21 on Friday, blah, blah, blah. Which leads me to a little bit of a story. I shouldn't do this, but what makes you think that nobody in Turkey knew this was going to happen? Just saying. Asking you two gentlemen. So let's say, David, pick a country, Mexico, one of these guys devalues their currency or does something to cause it to devalue. If you were in the know, what do you think you'd do?
What are you trying to say, Tom?
I think I'm saying that somebody, I'm going to say at least one knave on Friday took all his money out of the lira and put it in dollars or euro dollars, and now he's bringing it back this morning and he's 16% richer than his neighbor. Is that a fair statement?
Oh, I think that's absolutely a very, very fair statement.
Now, we would never think of anybody, after 20 years of peace on the trading floor, we'd never think of anybody doing something like that, would we? I mean, people don't do...
Perish the thought.
Yeah, we had a group of people from the Mexican government and some rich Mexican dudes up here for a seminar. This has got to be 90, 91, somewhere in there. And they had just... devalued their currency. So after, you know, these other people had them up for a seminar, but we did some speaking. And of course, I brought them over. Remember the Excelsior, David? I bring over the Excelsior for a few cocktails after the last. So there's a table of about 20, and we're all talking, and I go, you know, I feel sorry for you guys, you know, they just devalued the, the Mexican, peso. They just devalued the peso, like, the day before. And I said, you know, I feel sorry for you guys, your peso got devaluated. And the guy goes, what do you mean? If you know the right people, you send it overseas overnight, you bring it back the next day, and you're 10% richer than your neighbor. I mean, okay. I guess I could have thought of that. It just isn't something that I would necessarily do, that I would ever get that memo. You know, but these guys, it's a different world. I mean, the rest of the world is not America. That's why people want to live here, at least they want to now. Who knows the way we're going, but... That's another thing I want to bring up with you, Jen. Talk about people who want to live here. The amount of towns in Illinois, they're like falling apart.
Well, that was a depressing story, Tom. But, I mean, it confirms what I suspect. It's just hard to see it in cold numbers like that, though.
Well, but did you see the other one about around the country? There's all kinds of places like that. A lot of New York cities, a lot of Ohio cities. I mean,
we're not the only one.
And, you know, surprisingly, there's a lot of them in Louisville. I mean, in Kentucky and Tennessee. But you would think that everybody's moving there, and there's towns there that are falling apart. Is it just the mayor?
There's similar statistics, too, that are the part of the same problem, but there's this brain drain in say, Illinois, where people who are going to college, you know, they're not going to college in Illinois. And so the Illinois universities are seeing the same kind of phenomenon as you see it demographically. And, of course, that has huge consequences for where people settle later on, the people they meet, the people they marry, where they get jobs. They're not grounded in Illinois from a fairly young age. And that just kind of, I don't know what's going to reverse that, but it's going to take some kind of sales pitch that is bucking a trend that's been going on for some time. So it's bad enough that you get people who are already established in jobs and everything else leaving. Now you got people who really, from an earlier age, are not seeing a future in Illinois, and you got universities that are competing against you know, universities with a different vision of where they want their student bodies to come from. So it's kind of working. All this is conspiring to hurt Illinois big time.
The University of Illinois, and I'll maybe a little harsh with this, but Jan, they would have not one person from Illinois if they could get everybody from China, because they pay full bore. For those of you that don't know that have been in college recently, which of course I haven't, but other than the, I'll give a shout to the Loyolas of the world, not only having a good basketball team, but their in Illinois number and out of Illinois number is the same tuition. I mean, it may be too high in most people's opinion, but same thing at Notre Dame, again, way too high. At least there's one number. But all your state schools have this in and out of state number, and when they, let's put it this way, they pay themselves a lot of money. The administration of the University of Illinois, I think, does pretty well, Jan. I think if you and I were there and we're not vindictive people, boy, oh boy, I'd have the red pen out. I'm just saying.
I'm with you, too.
I think in the University of California, they have, 10 indirect people for every professor? Or something bizarre like that?
It's a scandal.
It just can't be that high. I mean, I'm going to say 2, maybe, is about as high as you should go. 2.5, but that, certainly not 10. But Illinois, the game now is for people, and, you know, we've had somebody from Michigan, without going back to names, who was the director of admissions from Michigan Engineering School, University of Michigan, said, oh, yeah, the policy is for a lot of places, if you're from Michigan, you take people from Ohio, and Ohio, you take people from Michigan. So everybody just ramps up the 20% more of the people out of state, and they all pay more. And it's, you know, it's, Janet, it's so sophomoric. How do people put up with this crap? Are they just... It's so hard to get through your day these days that you can't fight all these battles. And if you take lack of information or disinformation and throw it on top of there, and people would be stunned. I went through, I'll dig it up here, I'll find it again. Because, Microsoft, I still have Windows 7 on my one machine here where I've got all my old emails and everything in. One of the updates erased my, favorites. Believe it or not. And so anyway, one of the favorites, I'll find it again. There's a website that lists every school's tuition, room and board and stuff back to 2000 or maybe even before. It gives you both their in-state and out-of-state numbers. I was absolutely... David, I'll bet, as knowledgeable as you are, did you realize that Harold Washington College, Richard J. Daley College, have an in-state and out-of-state tuition number?
Definitely do.
You do? How'd you know that? I didn't know that at all.
Well, I mean, doesn't Illinois has one of the highest in-state tuitions in the country, right?
I would never have guessed that Richard J.
Yeah,
Daley.
I would know that.
Yeah, but I never would guess that Richard J. Daley over at Ford City would be drawing people from Indiana and screwing up higher tuition. I just never crossed my mind. I mean,
it's Illinois. I mean, what surprises you about that?
But you know, the weird part—the first year it happened, though, it went from like $2,000 to like $6,000 in 1 year. And some poor guy is coming over to Richard J. Daley Junior College from Hammond, and all of a sudden you double the guy's tuition in 1 year. What are you doing, right? First of all, the guy can't.
Well, I guess this is one of the beauties of distance learning too, or online education. You can do this now. It probably, depending on what you offer and what you need, or how it dovetails into your degree program or certificate program or whatever you're in school for, you can probably make out ahead if you go to a place like Daley College over someplace else, and it might be a contiguous state, it might be halfway across the world too, but I think all these people are getting on that, you know, bandwagon because it's easy money. You know, the zip code for your billing address is going to determine your tuition. And if you can get enough people who need the course bad enough and they don't care, they have financial aid for it, you know, you're golden.
What's the formula here if you get accepted to the University of Illinois from Wisconsin? I mean, most states have some sort of a formula how long you can move there and have to live there and so forth before your tuition goes down. I know some people that we know of, Jan, like their daughter went to Cal or someplace, and when they moved out there and actually got a student apartment, and they got a residency, and all of a sudden the next year it was like, you know, a tenth of their, or a third of the money. What's the, does anybody know what the story is in Illinois? I mean, if you're coming here from Kenosha, you go to University of Illinois and you're paying, you know, 40 some grand a year, and you want to cut it to 20, like, in, can you just get a, rent a house in Champaign, and after a year you're an Illinois resident, or there's got to be some way of determining.
Yeah, I don't know what the, you know, the residency time factors are, but I suspect, and I mean, I've heard this from people over the years, that the fraud in this, you know, part of college admissions is also significant, that you get people with fake addresses or relatives who were, you know, actually, you know, you're not housed in any of these places in-state, but you get the in-state break in your tuition. So I don't know what universities have done to get out of that kind of trap where they, it's all you have to do is just create a paper, you know, residency somewhere. I suspect that that's harder to do than it used to be, but I can't say for sure. But I can research that, and maybe I can report back on it in a subsequent program, because I've been interested in that, too. I got to believe there's still tremendous fraud there, too, especially when you got such disparity in tuition dollars and looking at what tuition is generally, you know, happening. So,
well, it seems like all the, what I'm trying to get together here today, Jen, is all the stuff that's happening around is just kind of taken together causes people to leave places. I mean, I get the part where you have a university that you subsidize. Now, whether you should ever really do that or not, I don't know. But say you do. Everything you do, I mean, if you were to write a paper at the University of Chicago in economics school, they're gonna, I mean, this is what they used to do to us. I mean, that's why I couldn't wait to get out of there, to be honest with you. They'd say, Illinois is going to subsidize, tuition at their state colleges for people in Illinois, you know, give me a stock and flow analysis and where this goes in the next 20 years. The whole idea was you're supposed to pick out what it would do. It's going to cause people to do this. It's going to cause people to do that. Oh, by the way, some guy's going to try and say he's from Illinois when he's from Indiana. Or you're supposed to go through all these lists of things that are going to happen, and then what's going to happen in Indiana? Well, they're going to do the same thing. At the end of the day, probably you would say that the tuition in Illinois is going to be half as much for people in Illinois, but guess what? There's not going to be anybody from Illinois there. And it's exactly what the conclusion you would come to economically at the end of the paper. And how is it, you know, some doofus like me, you know, when he's 21 years old, is supposed to figure this out, and these people are getting paid big money at the state, and they can't figure this stuff out. Or they do, and they don't care, or they never take the time, or they're one of the people with benefits, or this is not. That's why you have people going to school, is to be able to figure this stuff out before you do it. How could somebody not know that at the end of 20 years you're going to have a problem with this, where every state is not going to take people from their own state, take people from the other state because they pay more? Or people from China, which is worse. I'm not saying anything bad about China, but the reason why those people are there is because they pay up. Plus they're the best students, which probably causes some problem too. But, I mean, what's the point, Jen? I mean, how many people are at University of Illinois from China or from the Far East? Which isn't bad. I'm just saying the only reason why they're there is because they're paying more.
Right, and now they're in a situation where there's not enough of those students probably because of travel restrictions. And that's put these universities, all, not just, you know, the universities in Illinois, but elsewhere, in a box, because they depended on that, you know, rich student, you know, with, you know, lots of money behind them and paying full freight, no financial aid. That has dried up somewhat, and you got a revolution in admission standards now too, I think, to kind of compensate for that. So they're looking for ways of enlarging their pool of available students, because they're not getting the students that they'd like more of these days. And they'll take pretty much whatever they can get, but that's making for an uncertain admission process and performance, you know, profiles and everything else. Because they're attracting people now quite ambitiously, you know, students who, you know, don't submit test scores. It's, you know, based on your academic potential or your life experiences, not your actual academic performance. And I think that we haven't really seen how this is going to pan out and what happens to our college graduate pool. And it won't just be Illinois that's going to be, you know, in some difficulty, but so much stuff is in flux. You know, and what college is going to look like, you know, let alone what it's going to cost in 5 or 10 years.
Well, plus what you're supposed to know when you come out. But economically, you can't let, I mean, we do let it all the time, but if you were Solomon in charge of one of these things, you couldn't let Dave Scatena be a head of Illinois school making, you know, some ridiculous number like $1 million a year, and then all of a sudden have him go out and not let Illinois people in there and charge other people twice as much and raise his salary to $4 million a year. It's not what you're looking to do, but I think that's what's happened.
Right.
Which, you know,
right.
And as much as I'd like to see, you know, David make a lot of money, he might even, you know, buy me a piece of lasagna or pizza some night, you know, you never know.
It may happen.
You know, it's some place on the south side where he, you know, $5 a pizza. Actually, you can't find a $5 pizza anymore, can
There's
you?
No more $5 nope. pizzas. They're $30 to $35.
$30 to $35, yeah. It is scary. Greg stopped
on Topics Extra.
Yeah, oh yeah. We stopped at Fox's one night and he got two pizzas for the family. It's like $60.
Fox's. Oh, there's a name fond in my recollection.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, it's S&P Futures up 9.25 and NASDAQ Futures up 109. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jackson.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Low and low Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. He's Mr. Dave Scatena on the board. We have Mr. John Flanagan with us. S&P Futures up 8.25. NASDAQ Futures up 107. Just to get back real quick, I know we're kind of skipping around here, but just the idea of 19% on this interest rate they're up to in Turkey to try and combat their inflation issues. I'd love to see a chart of their money supply in the last 10 years. I got to believe it looks like ours is going up now, but I don't know that. I will try. For tomorrow's show, I'll try and dig into if I can find Turkish money supply numbers. I got to be someplace. David, maybe you can do that. See if you can Google Turkish money supply numbers the last 10 years, see where the hell they've gone. I bet they've...
Yeah, I'll take a look for it.
I bet they've shot right up. So, John, how do we... I don't think we can... We every day on the show, and if you listen to places other than the show, there's all these issues. And I just get the feeling that they're all sort of the same subject. I mean, that was the one interesting part about grad school when it was like when the nun was smacking Belushi and he looked up and saw the light. About maybe a month before I graduated at the University of Chicago, I was taking all my finals the last quarter I was there. It just dawned on me that when you get to the top end of accounting, marketing, finance, it's all the exact same subject. It's just a question of how you make a firm, a government, whatever it is, run properly either all things are there. Either the marketing people are finding the right customers and they're giving you enough feedback to where you have the right products for the right people. And if your cash is in there to float, you know, the 90 days before you get paid, you go under. If the finance isn't there, you're not making any money. If the manufacturing doesn't get stuff on time, it all has to happen. It's like a human body. It all has to be working or nothing works, right? And we seem like we fire out individual things every day that are, quote, wrong, and I think they're all part of the same program. Don't you, Amir, or is that just me going goofy here?
No, I think it is. It's you know, what's happened, and probably what we didn't have to worry about, you know, decades ago, was you've got bureaucrats and not experts in these various, you know, corners of the world making policy who don't have a view of where they fit into it, but they've got an extremely limited one, and they're working against, you know, every other corner of the system. So you got, I think you can see that kind of a microcosm in Chicago and in Illinois, where you've got these fiefdoms, you know, transportation and the vaccine programs and the lockdown orders and all this stuff, and it's supposed to be working towards, you know, a healthier population and an easier segue back to a normal economy, and the thing just stumbles along because there's no coordination of any of this that I can see. And most of it seems to be, you know, perfectly at cross purposes in some corners. So you could make a less effective, you know, strategy if you tried, but by kind of letting these things wander off on their own, there isn't enough skill or talent at the top to really notice what's wrong deep down or to try to fix it. So you got these engines just pushing in opposite directions all the time. And we don't make any progress. We get farther and farther behind in a lot of ways, and nobody seems to be particularly upset by it or upset enough to do much about it. And maybe they can't do too much, but you're right. I mean, there has to be some kind of, you know, normalizing of a interaction between these things that is functional and, you know, increases prosperity and health and happiness. And we have anything but that now.
Well, there's some sort of a sense you get about how people operate. And again, everybody knows that things. I am ragging on our political establishment from both sides because I don't think they've done a very good job. And I think part of that is we seem to elect people that don't have a clue in a lot of ways. I mean, it doesn't make they're dumb people. They're not, or they wouldn't be in those spots. But I mean, I was listening this weekend to, well, listen, News Radio 78 driving around, and Lori Lightfoot's all bent out of shape about some hospitals at Loretto or something. One of them,
Loretto Hospital, with letting people jump the queue to get the vaccine. I mean, this is talk about the non-story of 2021, but it's been the lead story on every news program ever since.
But I mean, here's a mayor. Met some people, watch some of the games on Friday. Everybody I know has some place either has too many vaccines, or they know of a place. Every teacher, everybody who there's. You know, I don't want to go down that road, but a lot of people work for the Chicago Board of Education. They're not giving out. They're not checking IDs if you walk up. And there's people in the administration. They're not teachers. They're all getting. If Lori had a clue, the amount of people that are jumping in front of the supposed line. But now this morning, they're expanding it to reporters and stuff. I mean, if you can't find yourself in one of these groups, you're a moron. Pretty much, right? If you can't figure out a way to get one of these things, then I gotta give you a lesson in street smarts, for God's sake. I mean, but the guy here is the engineer in the building says they're calling around the neighborhood the first day United Center. There's so many vaccines and nobody showed up. I mean, how does everybody know this but Lori? And she singles out one place that's given if somebody's there and you got them, give it. I mean, who's kidding? What's the point? I mean, what am I missing here?
Especially since, you know, Loretto was the first hospital to get the vaccine, and it was touted as, you know, an inner-city hospital. You know, it stuck it out in a neighborhood that's gone through some convulsions, to say the least, in the last 50 years. But it stuck it out, and it's much needed in that part of the city. So it was the front line for the, you know, distribution of the vaccine from the get-go, and you get a glitch like this where, in the eyes of certain people, the wrong people are getting the vaccine ahead of other people who they think are a preferred class, they shut the whole thing down, which to me is like, how does this help anybody if you're going to make this no longer, you suspend the giving out of vaccines at this place because of what happened here? That to me is just, well, why did you bother with any of this stuff? If you really now don't care if those people get the vaccine or not, you could have saved everybody a lot of wasted news time and everything else. But why don't you just double it and get as many people in there as possible? She knows that the vaccination rate among African Americans is historically going to be lower because they're deeply suspicious of vaccines, and probably with good reason.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But now she shuts down the place that was going to be the flagship for that neighborhood. That, to me, just doesn't make any kind of sense in any way of thinking.
Well, the whole point of this, since day one, I mean, if you listened, well, if you could any kind of a thread through what our alleged experts are saying is, well, we need to do two things. One is you need to protect the people that are seriously vulnerable, and those are the people who are over 65. Actually, it's more over like 70 or 75, but still, you want to protect that part of the group. And because this thing is contagious in a way where the people that have it don't know they have it, if you want to get herd immunity, you got to get to everybody. So, on your way, if you get to the nursing home and they tell you that there's 1,000 people over 65 there, and it turns out there's only 400. Well, in New York, they were giving out fines so much for giving the wrong people, they were throwing out the rest of the vaccines, which is stone cold stupid. I mean, I don't care. I mean, I very seldom say something like that, but you're stone cold stupid. I mean, that's crazy. So the other part of it, if you can give it to 620-year-olds who's walking down the block, you're sort of solving problem two. Now you're giving it to people who are going to be carriers and don't know they have it, so they're going to be your spreaders, right? So you need to do both, right? So
right.
At the end of the day, you'd love to get the people that are the most susceptible, but you really just want to get 1,000 people. If that's your valise of vaccines, you want to get it into 1,000 people's arms. And in terms of stopping the spread, you really don't care who they are, right? Do you? I mean, you'd like to.
You shouldn't.
No, you shouldn't.
It shouldn't be as important as they make it, that's for sure.
Well, they're making it sound like if there's, 30, 75-year-olds in line, and I'm a lot younger than that, and I'm standing in line, I'm not going to muscle ahead of one of those people because they're much more likely to die from it, okay? But if they don't show up, rather than give it to me or throw it out's the answer? I mean, come on. Now, if we decided to do 50 million people between the ages of 20 and 32, that'll help dramatically, correct, in terms of the spread?
Right.
I mean, you want to make sure that you protect the people who are the most vulnerable, but at the end of the day, you want to stop the spread. And those are the people that are out and around. I mean, I got to believe that the person in the nursing home, we don't want them dying, but they're not about to give it to you or me in a bar because they're in the nursing home. Right?
Well, and you would think, I mean, if you had sound thinking, creating this response, and making the vaccine available to as many people as possible, as quickly as possible, you wouldn't go about it the way they've done
No.
it. And it's turned into a carnival now where you got the whole Loretto Hospital thing. Is the reason that's in the news is because the people who jumped the line to get their vaccines happened to be, the concierge staff at Trump Tower. If it had been any other facility besides that, do you think there would have been much news coverage of it? I doubt it. But, I'm sure they would find some way of tweaking it to make it look like these are the unfavored people in our population who probably don't deserve a vaccine at all. And here they are getting ahead of everybody. I mean, this is the thinking that they're...
Well, if you're not...
It's all about pitting people against each other for stupidest reasons.
I mean, I don't want to give, a show... Well, I already have, but it should be a two-step process, I think. One is every... Well, I would have done it. I would have hospitals say, you got to want to be in this or don't you? Get yourself a couple of vans and you have 15 nursing homes in your area. If you want in, those are your places to go, to go talk to. But just the general population, you just want to give it to everybody, don't you?
Right.
I mean, you'd like
there was a big flap about, you know, when the United Center facility was taking appointments, and they found out that the people not from Chicago were going there too. And that just, you know, created this big, you know, furor. All we, you know, we got to give preference to the people in the city of Chicago. And I thought, well, maybe at some level, if you think this is where your funding is supposed to be going and other people have access to other funding, maybe it makes sense to track this, as, you know, so carefully. But at another level, it doesn't seem to make any sense to me at all. So who cares where they live? Who cares? Well, why does that make a difference if the goal is to get the state?
Plus, the federal government is allegedly paying for all these shots, right?
Right.
So I mean,
what's wrong with the system that starts to like nitpick with reasons to decline giving people vaccines? I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, it's I don't, and we waste seemingly we waste so much time at this, and anyway, but. We are doing better. I mean, Illinois is doing a lot better than I thought it would. I mean, how many vaccines have we given? Like quite a bit. And
I think there has been a tipping point that we've, you know, passed over now, where I do think people think there is a light at the end of the tunnel that they couldn't see 6 weeks ago.
Well, I think you're a lot safer.
I get that feeling just by talking to people. I can't really back it up with any data, but. I think the mood of the state is improving, which is thank God
after too.
A year of this nut stuff. And it's nice to see some improvement.
So how do we get ourselves back? And we got a few minutes to talk here. How do we get ourselves back? Because we've been kind of scattered this morning because there's a lot of weird stuff going on in the world. How do we get ourselves back to having infrastructure issues? I mean, right now, one of the things that I would have liked to have done is, because I'm a rail guy, but... you know, some of these areas outside of Chicago, I would have liked to have had the commuter lines sort of extended, and if we could, up their average speed, okay? And so the person from Janesville, Wisconsin, you know, could commute to Schaumburg or could commute to Chicago if they needed to. And because, you know, some of your bigger firms like to be in spaces where all these, you know, this talent is available. And one of the reasons why you're seeing these small towns disappear is because, the big company, I mean, you know, the big shots at Archer Daniels Midland, they don't want to be in Danville, wherever the hell they were, right? Or Peoria or someplace. I mean, unfortunately. I don't know that I would spend that kind of money. Is that the future? I mean, do people want to be in Chicago? I mean, I don't know. How many years away are we from some sort of a comeback here, if there is one?
Remember the push for, you know, the high-speed rail link between Illinois and St. Louis, which, you know, always made sense because the trip could have been a lot shorter than it was. And I think a lot of people would prefer to take a train than to drive, just because the drive is—it's a tough drive. It's a slow, it's a long, boring drive.
Oh, it's horrible, yeah.
And anything you could do to make the trip easier would have been a plus. But now I don't know. Are there that many people who are interested in going to either place from any place in between? I don't know. I suspect that the gloss is off. You know, big city life for a lot of people. Certainly, the people living in big cities, it seems to be.
Well, where do you think that we come out on? Of course, my significant other and her friends. I could say it's going to be 65 degrees today, and they're going to say, no, it'll be 90 or 40, just to, you know, disagree. Just the way it is, and it doesn't make it bad. I'm just saying. They're convinced now that, like, nobody's ever going back to work. Now, I'm sitting here thinking, I don't know which is right or wrong. I mean, clearly, at Pullman, if you're building a railroad car in a factory, you got to show up at the factory. I mean, obviously, that ship has sailed to a lot of extent. But the Googles of the world and the Microsofts and those people will virtually all tell you that they gained so much by... Didn't a lot of them get rid of actual offices and everybody was in the room together? And that, yeah. that the interaction causes people to come up with ideas and process ideas and interact with other people, and that your productivity is dramatically higher. Whether they're right or wrong, I don't know. But clearly those companies have done very well, and that's their story. I mean, McDonald's, I think, does that in their new downtown office. A lot of places do. I mean, how do you How do you contrast that with everybody working at home, dogs barking, kids there? The kids hopefully won't always be there, but how do you contrast that with never talking to anybody you work with other than a phone or texting? I mean, if they're right, they can't both be right, I guess. I mean, some combination. Can you be one day a week at home, 2 days a week? Yeah, probably. Especially if you're talking to customers on the phone. You don't have to sit an hour on a train to go talk to the customers on the phone downtown when you can use your own phone. That part I get. But where do you think the theory of this all ends up?
I think that, you know, it's a certain level of job. You know, a clerical job like producing paperwork. You know, legal pleadings. Well, the role of a legal secretary, for example, isn't going to be the same as it used to be. You don't need to have somebody in an office. You probably don't want people sitting near each other talking about stuff, wasting time, when they should be at home producing stuff that they've been emailed raw versions of, and they have to tweak it and send it back, or, you know, share it, or whatever they are going to do with the end product. But they don't need to be in an office to do that, and there's great incentives if you're running a law firm to trim your rent payment every month and your utility bill and everything else, and get the people at home using their equipment. Maybe you can subsidize that to make it easier for them. But of course, in the process, you tend to ruin the lives of a lot of your employees, because there's no boundary between their, you know, work life and their home life. And if they got other people in the household who are equally conflicted, you got a lot of miserable people struggling to produce, you know, and earn a paycheck and justify their existence in any way, you know, by making their home life much less peaceful and tranquil and attractive than it used to be. So I think it stirs up a lot of anxiety and resentment, and it makes vacation time much more important probably than it used to be, just because you got to get away from everything. You can't just take a week's vacation and sit at home. You already know how sour that can be from having worked at home for so long. So it might eventually stimulate, you know, the tourism and travel business, but you're going to need destinations where there's stuff worth going to. And I see cities like Chicago losing that game, you know, unless they turn around the convention situation or the trade shows, or get the hotels up and running again, or open all the museums and get rid of the mask requirement and social distancing. I don't think you're going to have any reason to come to Chicago as a tourist either. So I don't know. All of this, you know, there's a lot of pent-up of need and appetite for things, but it's getting harder and harder to satisfy them, those needs.
Yeah, I don't know where it's all going to pile up. The idea, matter of fact, one of my friends, his wife was working at this place, and she was working from home and has a lady boss, different than, I mean, and all of a sudden she ended up quitting because the boss did nothing but think that all she was doing was screwing off at home, and she wanted a camera on the computer where she could, like, watch her all day. Like, I mean, we're going to go 1984, we're going to go the whole way. The idea that that you're going to be at home, I mean, obviously if you're making phone calls to clients, people can track your phone calls, right? And I'm sure they do, to make sure if you're actually working. But, you know, the idea that I waste more time at work than I do at home, I don't know if I buy that, John. I mean, it's going to come to the point where you're going to have to be in front of the screen, visible to people. And I don't know. We'll see how this all lands. I get the feeling that people being people, if enough of the people go back to work, you're going to be afraid they're talking about you. You're going to want to be there. Plus, if half the people at work, you're not getting a promotion from home, I don't think. Although maybe things have changed so much more that I can't even recognize the world, which is possible. Because, of course, I've been here every day since things started. But because there's where I got my screens, and, you know, the clients are here, and I want it the most I can in one spot. And why would I want to replicate all this at home? I don't need another studio.
Well, if you can create an impression among your employees that everybody's job is tenuous, and it's, you know, you got to overproduce no matter where you are, especially if you're at home where you can be monitored and where you're already, you're kind of guilt tripped into feeling like you have to do more to justify the pleasure of being at home with your yoga pants and not looking your best, but you're producing. I think there's an incentive to work harder at home. Because there is this feeling that this is the only way now you can distinguish yourself from other employees. And, you know, nobody was going to get points going into a place, an an hour earlier than somebody else in an office because nobody would know you were there. But if you are all at home and you're going to be, you know, tracked and your activities are filmed and everything else, and you're on film for a lot of the stuff you're doing at home, I think you get people who are turning into real automatons. They're working a lot harder than they'd ever have to work in an office, and they don't have the pleasure of being able to listen to books on tape in their car or to sleep on the train and get a little extra hour of shut-eye in the morning or in the afternoon or to go out and have a nice lunch with your coworkers. I think those days are gone in a huge slice of the economy. It will never come back. You won't have that kind of culture anymore, and that's really a shame.
I think it is too.
There's no replacement for that kind of ability to socialize and occasionally to gossip away from the boss about what's really going on.
Well, what is
now you make that almost impossible for people to do with a clear conscience because they're worried that it's going to be reported or this is on tape or a podcast is going to turn up in the wrong hands.
Well, Jan,
it's a frightening situation.
You see times in history, economic history, when things that we were observing here, but we can't exactly put our finger on the price. We don't know if Chicago never makes it back. If all of a sudden, there's 1/10 or 1/20 and 1/5 of the convention business. If there's 1/5 of this, 2/5 of that, 3/4 of this. What is the number that you need just to keep a city alive? I mean, do you need half the conventions or 40% or 70 or 80 before the hotels, which have been building here for a long time, the amount of, what do they call the smaller hotels? The
boutique hotels?
But I mean, if all these places start to close, I mean, what's the number that you drop off the tax rolls? I mean, I was reading something which I shouldn't have read, because I've read a lot of stuff that the crash of 29, and we're at a market top here, pretty much, and we clearly are at a market top in terms of the stocks that aren't in the averages. The cloud stocks, those kinds of things that are, 15, 20, 30, 50 times revenue, those kinds of things. And they are the future, I'm saying. I'm not saying they're not. But they're not all in the future. Because if you figured out how much money they all had to make to grow into those prices, I don't know if the economy's big enough for that, at least not now. But in the 20s, if you went back and looked at it now, it's not the, how could we possibly have had the crash in October of 1929? And now the vernacular is, how the hell do we make it that long? Because parts of the economy were falling apart entirely during the 20s. The agriculture was in a depression, for God's sake, and agriculture was a much bigger piece of the economy than it is now. But it was almost like, how did we manage to prop it up that long? I mean, it was right there in front of everybody's face. I mean, I don't know how long we can continue to print money and not become a small turkey. I hope 19.5%. But we're at some point we have to fight this, and to think we're not going to be have to go to 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 to do that. And then look at the government, how much money they're in high. Can you imagine the state of Illinois having to pay 6% interest or 7 or 8? I mean, I can't. Even, I mean, so well, you know, we're this. You know, it's the cards holding up the house are dropping like one at a time all around, and I don't know how there is unless we get some kind of a plan to put all this back together. I mean, how do you give all this money, which I think is supposedly in this bill, to Illinois without saying, you guys got to fix your pension thing? They have some rule in there that says you're not going to use this for pension, you're not going to use it for something else. It was, Jan, you and I are old enough, they were going to use the lottery for schools. Does anybody honestly think they did? I mean, it goes into the general fund, and yeah, I guess you can make the statement that it's going to schools because if we didn't have this money, we'd have to get money from somewhere else to go to the schools. You could say it's going anywhere, I mean, because once it gets into the big pot, it's going everywhere. But these numbers this year, now people are somewhat comfortable. It's not like we don't realize that last year was a bad one. I mean, everybody does. We knew that in a year like that, you got to go into some kind of a deficit financing. I mean, I know that. But the people really get that we basically have pissed away or invested wisely in the COVID, depending on how you want to look at it, essentially 2.5 years taxes. If you just look at the income tax and say the payroll tax is going in one pocket and out the other the same month. I mean, how the hell are you going to get that back? And now the trick is we're not going to tax for it. We're just going to print it. And the idea that's been working so far, but now the flying ointment there is inflation. Now we can deny, but now I got to believe that Turkey did the exact same thing that we're doing now. We're going to go back, one of these days, maybe today or tomorrow, I'll dig out, and somewhere I'll find the Turkish money supply, or I get it from my guys at the Fed, maybe. And we're going to find out that those guys have poured money into the system for probably 5 or 6 years. And this is what happened. Now all of a sudden, this guy says, we don't like inflation, we can't keep up with anybody else, all it does is running our currency down, so we're going to run our interest rate up. Okay, well, that's the fix. Well, the fix is not good when everybody's broke. I don't understand why we don't have more of a... I mean, the people on both sides of the aisle, instead of collecting money and putting it in their back pocket, this is serious stuff, John. And it wasn't long ago that we went through all this. And we had, and we're at the same spot, it seems to me. Or am I just being Chicken Little here?
No, it's really true. And, of course, the problem is in trying to seek what's the real tipping point. When do you really go into panic mode? By the time you discover what that point is, it's already too late to do anything about it. Then it's just a slippery slope. There's no way you can dig yourself out, with interest rates or anything else that are going to be sustainable or workable at some point, because there's just too much else that's gone into the grabber. So, you're finding that point is itself destructive. Testing fate, to see how low you can go, but that really isn't a good formula for any kind of long-term prosperity.
Well, it's going to be fun on Wednesday because Kevin's going to throw all the money in this NCAA. Talk about changing topics. See how these smaller conferences now that have won some games, they're going to be making money for a while out of this. And the Big Ten came in there and they've got, three teams left? Out of nine or something?
Yeah.
And, I mean,
there's winners and losers always.
Yeah. John, we'll let you go, buddy. Maybe talk to you later. SP Futures up 6, NASDAQ Futures up 86. Be right back, Mr. Mike Hart.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom L. Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. S&P futures up 750. NASDAQ futures up 92. Some craziness around the world here because of this lira being devalued in Turkey and the Erdogan firing his third chief head of the central bank, the third guy in 2 years, and because he raised interest rates up to 19.5% to fight their inflation battle, and Erdogan is basically pissed off at him, so he fires him. Dow futures down 16. Over in Europe, got the DAX up 29.2%, the FTSE up 8.1%, CAC around down 24.4%, so kind of quiet over there. Asia, though, talk about all over the place. Nikkei down 617, it's 2.1%, allegedly. There's a pretty big connection with some of the people in Japan with the Turkish lira that got whacked this morning because it essentially was down like 10% against the dollar. I don't know why there'd be that kind of connection between Japan and Turkey. Maybe Jeff will know when he comes down, but I would never have guessed that. Shanghai, however, up 38 points, 1.1%. Hang Seng down 105.4%. So it's a tough read there. Bonds down 4 basis points to 1.69, 1 minus 0.30, but it's pretty much unchanged. Japan, however, is down 3 basis points to 0.07 positive when it's been 0.11 or 0.10 for a long time. So somehow there is a connection between Japan and this lira in Turkey that we'll learn more about it, talk about tomorrow, I guess. Oil down 18 cents, 61.24. Brent down 25 cents, 64.28. Natural gas down 3 cents, 249. Arbob unchanged at 194. We got gold is down 960 now, at 1732. Silver down 69 cents. It's 2.6%. That's a lot. Copper up a penny. And when we got our crypto, Bitcoin down 378, pretty quiet at 57,199. Dave, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, and upsets.
Oh, good morning. 736 in Chicago. Traffic this morning, normal buildup on the Kennedy and Eisenhower due to long-term road construction. We do have some slow traffic on the Stevenson at the exit ramp onto the Ryan Expressway. There's a road closure due to road construction, Wolf Road South between Milwaukee Avenue and Manchester Drive. And weather today, Chicago 49, sun coming up. Fair, high today is going to be 64 with a mix of clouds and sun. For our Phoenix listeners, it's 57 and clear with a high of 75 and sunny. We'll start with the NBA. The Bulls beat the Pistons last night 100-86. The Suns topple the Lakers 111-94. In the NCAA tournament, I call it the Bracket Buster Weekend. Loyola beats number one seed Illinois 71-58. We have four double-digit seeds that are going to advance to the Sweet 16. And number 11 Syracuse, number 15 Oral Roberts, number 12 Oregon State, and number 11 UCLA plays number 11 Abilene Christian, so we will definitely have that. Big Ten, a lot of problems this weekend. Only has three teams left out of nine, and they'll all play today, Michigan, Iowa, and Maryland, so we'll see what happens with that. In spring baseball, the Sox tie the Diamondbacks 4-4, and the Cubs beat the Reds 11-6. Back to you, Chief.
We have Mr. Jeff Joseph. Jeff, we have you?
Hey, good morning, Chief.
How are you, buddy, on a Monday? Good for
how about
you.
It?
Yeah. Hey, how are you, man? What do you make? Did you short the Turkish lira on Friday, and now you're 16% happier today, laughing all the way to the bank?
I was going to be about 5% happier anyway, so yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
That's about right.
So you think that was
I think there's no direct connection. You're fishing for a Japan connection with Turkey, and I think it must be just that those Asian markets open early on Monday. The first one's trading, so I think that's probably why you're seeing the reaction here. I can't think of any other logical reason for connection there.
Japan falls 2% in mixed Asia trading day. The earlier headline was because of connections to Turkish lira. So I'm read it off the headline, but like you, I'm a little fuzzy about why that would be.
Yeah, that's quite a move, firing. I think this is their fifth central banker in 2 years. This guy was only around for a couple months.
Well, I think that if your inflation is too high and you want to fix it, you need to drop your money supply, which raises the interest rates. That's why you don't ever want to be in that position, Jeff, I'm thinking, right?
I'm thinking. That's it.
But, I mean, he doesn't want interest rates high, but he doesn't want inflation high either. What are you going to mean, this Erdogan? He's a little touched.
Yeah, well, I think we have that evidence already. Yeah, but we'll see what the ripple is on this. But 16% is a pretty big move, right?
Yeah, but now do you think some people in Turkey might have known about this and maybe made a move on Friday and are actually laughing today?
Well, there's certainly a trend. I mean, this is the over the last 5 months, they've raised the main interest rate by about 450 basis points,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's at 19%. I mean,
well, we saw that here. What was the highest week?
That's like our Carter years.
You know, it's interesting that everybody lobs that one onto poor Jimmy.
If it stands out, you got to wear it. I mean, he was that was his turn.
The history of that is actually, I'll say, a little more complicated because
it's just his watch. So
actually, virtually all the bad statistics, the really horrible ones, came in Reagan's first term. If he would not have been reelected, he'd have been the Carter. But since it turned so much in his second term, he got credit for that, and first part was all Carter. And then nobody before Carter. I mean, it all started, really, in, what, 68, when he went off to Bretton Woods?
Yep, right.
So it was. It really takes many, many years. But what do they say in The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance? When the facts conflict with the story, print the story.
It was a good movie.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it a lot, John, but it was a good one.
What a great line. Huh? No, when the facts conflict with the legend, print the legend. That was it, right?
The legend. There you go.
And, but yeah, it was, the interesting part is if when you read, one of the listeners sent me a book about the Fed, and it wasn't the Creature from Jekyll Island or anything, but it was one, and it starts out with Jimmy Carter, who is, you know, I don't know, if he, I don't think he was the world's best president, but pretty much an honest guy. He brought a lot of his people from Georgia with him, which probably wasn't the smartest thing. You know, he had very much the same problems at Washington that Trump did. You know, he never really got acclimated, they never really welcomed him. It was just on a different level. He didn't fight back as much, but it was sort of the same thing in a lot of ways. But they told him that the economy is going to have to go into recession at some point. And then they brought Paul Volcker in. He hired Volcker, right? I have a feeling that if you went down the street today and interviewed 50 people, 49 would say that Reagan hired Volcker to fix things from Carter's mess. And it wasn't really the truth. Supposedly, they went to Carter and said, look, we can push this recession off until after the election. It's like a year before. Or we can bring it on now when it should. Or it'll be. He said, will it be worse if we wait a year? And the answer was yes. And he said, well, let's do it now. I think I'll win anyway, which of course he didn't. And so Volcker really started his, you know, raising the interest rates, pulling the money supply down to fight the inflation during Carter's last year. But I'm going to say most of the numbers, the actual inflation numbers, didn't happen until probably in Reagan's first year. The really bad number. It was all kind of a mishmash. But by that point, it had been going on so long that a lot of your unions, and this is what I was ran into at Pullman, unions all had cost of living clauses and everything in there. That didn't happen early on, Jeff. That happened after a period of years. I mean, this was a decade long problem. It started in probably what, 68?
Sure.
And it really didn't start to come down. Interest rates didn't come down until August of 82. So we're talking, you know, probably talking 15 years almost. I mean, it was a while. I mean, it's pretty hard to put your finger, one of a, I've learned an awful lot from my guests. You very much especially. But Carl has got me, and if I ever get a chance to teach class or something, I'm gonna quote you two guys probably the most. Well, Lou and Kevin Earl have their specialties as well, but the interesting part from Carl is I've learned to look at 30-year pieces of paper in terms of employment, in terms of money supply, in terms of things. And if you look at stuff that long, you almost can't tell who becomes president and who doesn't. These are all like long-term things that people just fall into. And they're just caught by the wave. I mean, if you happen to land in a good time, you know, you land in a good time in a lot of ways.
Very true.
I mean, everybody says that Clinton had the surplus. Well, we had the dot-com bubble, and we came back from that a little bit economy-wise, but also you had massive amount of taxation from people who made money in dot-com stocks, and the people who didn't can't write it off because you can't write off more than 3%.
That's right.
I mean, how much of the federal surplus
and the tax increase to kick off as an administration right out of the gate.
Yeah, but to this day, everybody will talk about Ronald Reagan as the great tax cut man, and how he saved the world by cutting taxes. But everybody forgets that the year after that tax cut, they had to put through a tax increase because it was burying the federal deficit. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, it's really, what do you think happens here? When does this tax raise come through? How much is everybody going to be clipped at every level here? And how's it going to happen? One thing I can't go back in history and find so much, maybe because I just don't know where to look. I don't know how other countries have dealt with just printing too much money. I guess you did it in the mercantile age when people would devalue their currency vis-a-vis the gold, right? And we get you to sort of the same place. But it's not just our federal deficit that's in trouble. We've got, by the end of this year, we're going to end up with, $10 trillion Fed balance sheet, which is really just a deficit, right?
Right.
So, I mean, how do you know of any time when we've come back from something like that? Was there a fix other than productivity and time and hoping things get better?
Well, it's hard to imagine that a tax increase, an aggressive one, would be a fix. I can't think of when that would indeed be the case coming out of a recessionary environment. So I think your point is we're entering a new territory. There's no predicate period, I think, that capsules what we've just gone through. And then putting a large tax increase on the heels of that. So I think we'll be in new territory, particularly after this excess in printing money. You know, trillions of dollars, literally, in the last 5 years. So that will be an interesting new experiment.
Yeah, what do you think?
Thank God Stephanie Kelton wrote that book. Otherwise, we would not know what to do.
Yeah. But even that, Jeff, it started, I remember, we first started the show like 10 years ago, saying that the new economic mantra is, don't ever worry about paying anybody back. It's not a household.
Right.
It's just if you can get the real GDP to grow, you know, a millionth of a percent faster than your debt load, you know, extend yourself out 3 centuries and you're okay. You know, the problem is we've never gotten the growth higher than our increase in our debt load, right? I mean, clearly, if Jeff, you know, the family Joseph is getting a 20% raise a year in income and your credit card bills are going up 10, well, and you're not paying 20%, but your credit card bills are going up 10, you're gaining at it every year, right?
Right.
Well, that's the theory. But I think most people would say, I'd just rather not owe as much, right? Especially if I have interest rate problems and if something untoward shows up, you know, my new car, all of a sudden I need a transmission. I didn't count on that. Now the credit card goes up some. So I don't even know how you go about doing this because right now, they have to keep buying stuff just to stay even, right? Because if you buy assets that are shorter term, like mortgages, and people pay off the mortgages, you get the money put right back at you, don't you? So you got to keep buying just to stay even. But
the asset inflation needs something behind it to keep it going. So it's either going to be people buying those assets, or the market continuing to support the assets, or the Fed pumping those assets, but the cash has to come from somewhere.
Well, Jeff, what happens when the every year, matter of fact, I think you stopped by one night or two before every place closed. I mean, the Fed guys would tell you at the end of the year, we give this huge check essentially to the Treasury Department. Now, where that comes from is they essentially print money, make up money, whatever you want to call it, and buy bonds. Okay, so the bonds they buy pay interest. So the Fed gets the interest on something that they made up the money to buy. So, of course, they've got cash in a till, right? So they turn around and they repay that after expenses to the Treasury, usually in some kind of a big ceremony, or at least in their own mind, a big ceremony every year, right? But as long as the price of the bonds keep going up, you never actually lose money. But if all of a sudden it goes the other way and these bonds keep going down, I mean, I got to believe, what do you suppose the balance sheet or the implied, if they're marked to market, if the stuff in Europe, if interest rates ever go to 0.2% and these guys have bought all these bonds at minus 0.3%, I mean, how much money have they lost on the stuff they bought? And what are they going to do with that?
That's right.
I mean, I don't know. What do you mean?
There's nothing conceivable there.
Does everybody just wait till they're out? Hope they're out of office when this all happens, or what? hope it's not their job anymore.
Well, you're right. You're right about Carter, though. In that transition, that you know, he really was aggressive. What I recall most about that was the impact he had on bringing some of the utility and gas prices down. You know, it was actually Reagan that was supporting the global coalition that was supporting oil prices coming out of the Middle East. And in a twist of historical irony, it's really Carter that encouraged competition for the U.S. manufacturing of oil and utilities, that actually increased the competition that in turn brought those prices down. Which helped, you know, subside inflation ultimately. So that was that really was his initiative. That wasn't Reagan's.
Well, you know, it's when you have all these calls now from the far left for universal minimum income or something. Mm-hmm. What do they call it now? There's a name for it.
Basic income. Universal basic income.
How is that different than Nixon's negative income tax?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Except Tricky Dick wanted to get rid of all the other programs,
right?
Which I don't think. Well, that would cause a stir now if the aldermen
I mean, everyone's taking their own different shot at that. Steve Forbes, you know, basically his flat tax approach was contingent on eliminating the other tax programs, also.
Well, the flat tax stuff. I don't know. Whenever you hear anybody on TV say we need to have the expand the base, have a flat tax, those kinds of things, I think there's, well, I mean, we've gone through it a bunch of times. I'm not going to do it right now because talking to you is more important. But we have such a regressive and progressive base to the tax here. I mean, they say somebody who makes less than what if a family makes 45 grand a year and owns like a small house or something, they usually don't pay any income tax, right?
Right.
But that doesn't mean they're not paying taxes.
Right.
I mean, we have so many different levels, and I don't, you know, you're more of a world traveler than me because I don't go anywhere. But don't some of the countries like in France and some places, even though the income tax seems to be a lot higher than ours, isn't that it? Isn't that like all you pay in some places?
No, they have the value added tax on, you know, on.
Okay. But I mean,
which is a tax. It's a sales tax essentially, but it's applied at different levels of the production process, which makes it a more comprehensive class. So these are substitute taxes. Theoretically, that's what they're meant to be. You know, if you have a flat tax, essentially you would want to eliminate your taxation system, like retail tax and income taxes, etc. Otherwise, you're right. You have these two different regimes of something, one regressive tax and one progressive tax, and you don't achieve your net result. So even value-added tax is meant to be a tax that exists in its own right without an income tax around it. But when you have piecemeal legislation and, you know, and the manner in which, you know, laws are applied, you end up with taxes upon taxes upon taxes. So, you know, the overhaul of our tax system is probably, you know, one of the most essential legislative initiatives that should be undertaken, but, you know, the odds of that ever occurring are slim and none.
Well, but I guess what I was getting to is, I don't know that, having never been there, I mean, does France have city, county, state, and federal like we do here?
I don't know if they have that extent of regional taxes. They certainly have a federal tax and a value-added tax.
Right. We know they have at least two. Now, I got to believe that, yeah, that Paris gets something out of you.
Yeah.
I mean, they must. But, yeah. I mean, here, I mean, in this country, we have just at the federal level, we've got the income tax revenue.
Well, we have state income tax. We have sales tax.
Right. But, I mean, on the federal level, we've got income tax revenue is $1.6 trillion. All right, and by the way, we spent over $3 trillion last year, right? So we doubled up on our, and then there's payroll tax revenue, which is very regressive, correct?
Right.
That's $1.3 trillion, and now we get a load of this. State tax revenue is actually 2.1. It's actually higher than federal income tax revenue, and most of that, I guess you can say that the if you have a more expensive house, you pay more, so it's not totally regressive, but it's fairly regressive because a lot of that's sales tax and stuff, right? You get a lot of your local revenue is $1.6 trillion, so it's higher than your federal payroll tax. So actually,
right, but the dynamics of the property tax was changed by Trump's tax law, whereas, you know, in states like Illinois, New York, and in California, you could not deduct more than $10,000. That became very progressive. That's the one material manner in which Trump's tax changes were mischaracterized by the press. And as anyone with any kind of income in Illinois, California, or New York would tell you, you ended up with a higher tax bill as a result of not being able to deduct over $10,000 on your mortgage.
Well, there's been times before, Jeff, when they've made rules like that. It used to be, certainly in our lifetime, first your sales tax is deductible, but then they lower the, I mean, here's kind of what happens, and I think you'll agree with me on this, is how many times in the last, I'm going to say 50 years, did the federal government lower the tax rate and then get rid of all the deductible stuff?
Sure.
Used to be when your tax rate was higher, you actually deducted, there was a table for your sales tax, there was a table for your property tax. So you could, and if you made $40,000, they'd say, okay, your sales tax on average is, you know, $900 or something. You could take that off. But if you went out and bought a car and actually paid $500 or $600 in sales tax on the car, you could add that to the normal, correct?
Mm-hmm.
But now, I mean, they got a Jeep coming out that's going to be $100,000. So what's your tax on that? Like $7,000 or something?
It depends. Is it electric?
No, I don't think the Jeep is. Hey, that's another question. Yeah. Totally off topic. How are they going to figure out how to tax these electric cars?
Well, they're getting tax incentives, or at least they were through this through 2020. There was tax incentives on electric vehicles. I'm assuming those remain in place.
Yeah, but you're not going to give them a freebie.
I'm not sure about that.
You're not going to give them a freebie on the road forever. Why would you? Or else there'd been road taxes or your gasoline taxes.
That's right. But there have been, obviously, you know, the market supported electric vehicles, and with those tax incentives. And I really don't know the status of whether or not those still exist. I would assume that they would.
Yeah, I don't know if they. So in other words, I go and buy a Tesla, I get a tax break. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Because the thought of me ever buying a Tesla.
Something that and I don't Tesla out of the gate.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah. What do you make of? We've got a down week last week in the market. We only got 1 minute, Jeff. What do you make of today? We're up some. Interest rates have backed off from the 1.75, but they're still like 1.7. Where do you think we head from here?
Well, I would wonder if there's a little bit more carryover on, you know, globally from the response to Turkey. I'm not imagining that would be the case, but it's not impossible. So,
Well, in terms of real money, I don't think it's all that important. The fact that, is it the canary in the coal mine? That was the question.
Right.
Did you have any Kansas City Southern, and now we're down to five railroads instead of four or six?
Yeah, how about it? What's with the big day on Kansas City Southern today? Why are they up like in the teens?
They're bought by Canadian National.
Oh.
So Canadian, yeah. I mean,
if
we allow it to go through. So they would have bought in the last how many years both Wisconsin Central, the IC, and the Kansas City Southern. So basically the entire central part of the country is going to be Canadian National.
Yeah, I saw them earlier up about 30 on the day or this morning. So yeah. I think it was pre-market. So
34.
I saw that. You get your vaccine yet?
I don't really need it since I already had it.
Yeah, that's right. That's what you say. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't need it. I'm going to guess I'll probably go get it in late summer.
Uh-huh.
I'm waiting to see. There's a study I get all the time from Britain, and they're tracking how long it takes for the antibodies to degrade. So, I mean, as soon as they say they start to degrade, I'm going to go get it.
Sounds right. Which I think sort of makes sense.
Plan. SP Futures up 6.25, NASDAQ Futures down 93. I imagine we'll have Mike tomorrow, right?
You will.
All right, bud, take care of yourself.
All right.
We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What do we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.